paper you have a declaration of some kind saying that you declare under penalty of perjury that all of this is true. Or if you don't declare under penalty, you might say, I affirm. Whatever it is, again, it's a secular thing that you're simply saying that you're telling the truth and you're willing to be punished if you're caught lying. Do you roll with that, Ron?
Not under duress.
I belong to a system that has no, what do they call it?
Here we go.
Say it again.
I'd say I'm an. The system I belong to, there is no acquittal.
Hold it close to you.
The system you're into,
there's no acquittal. There is no such thing as acquittal. I read my Britannica on Inquisition. There's never been an acquittal, period.
Okay. So what, Ron, what does not guilty mean if there are no acquittals?
Well, it's kind of like saying I'm not, you know,
I'm innocent. Well, no cent means you're guilty. So how do you say innocent without being no cent? Read your blacks on no cent.
Okay.
Well, what about the I am?
All right. Well, anyhow, the next thing, now everything from the top of the page down to the horizontal line, that horizontal line, that's generally referred to as the caption of the page. Okay? So there's also a specific meaning to the word caption, and I forget what it is, but everybody I ever talk to, when you talk about the caption, you're talking about everything above that horizontal line at the bottom. Everything on that page above that line. So that caption is the same on all your papers. The only difference on all your papers has to do with the title of the paper. In this case, we use the word action. But it could say complaint. It could say motion. It could be petition. Whatever it is, you know, you describe what it is. But other than that, the left side of the page is the same. Or I mean the caption is the same. One other little variation. On your initial paper, you could say, where you say you're the plaintiff and you list all the defendants. Sometimes what you can do on your second paper and later is where you have the defendants, you can put the first defendant's name and then a comma and then E-T, then a space, S-E-Q, period. No, I'm sorry, E-T space and then A-L period, et al. In other words, it just says that there's more, there's other defendants. But it's a way, it's a shorthand, it keeps the caption shorter and gives you more room on the page to write. And so that's the customary thing to do also. What I do on my own as a personal policy, because you can do it either way, but as a personal policy, I will list all of the defendants on the first paper, which you do anyway, and I will list all the defendants on any court orders and any judgments, you know, things like that. Or wherever I think it's significant that I want everybody's name listed, sometimes I'll do it. It's an arbitrary decision on my part. I could have said et al. Also, but I choose not to.
Except federal. Federal, you don't put John Doe's, I know, so why would you put et al.?
You put John Doe's on federal. Oh, yeah. Here's the deal on John Doe's, okay? I think you've seen it. In fact, you've seen John Doe's, all right, on the state papers, right? Okay. Putting John Doe's is worthless, all right? You don't put John Doe's on your paper and nothing more. The only reason for using a John Doe or a Mary Roe or John Doe number one and John Doe number two, whatever it is, the only reason for doing that is because you don't know the person's name. You know everything about him. You know what he did. You know the wrong he did. You describe the whole thing. So in your lawsuit, if you're suing somebody and you know everything about him except the name, and you list in your paper what John Doe did to you and why he's wrong and the whole thing, just like as if you knew his name. That's when you put his name in the caption as a defendant. Don't just put those 1 through 20 and then say nothing about those 1 through 20. You should have 20 different does in there that did 20 different things to you. Okay? Or a team. The only purpose of a John Doe is to have a name where you didn't have a name. Later on discovery, because you can do discovery too, okay, even though you're the plaintiff. Later on discovery, if you find out the person's name, you amend your complaint and you put the name in. So in that sense, I know that the federal papers will allow a John Doe if you actually have a John Doe that you're talking about and not just a name. What do you think? Does that fit with what you're saying? Okay.
No, it's a stationary question. Is legal number paper, is that available from stationary? Does Word have a function for that? Or
Word does have a function. If you open up, if you have Microsoft Office and you open it up, they have templates in there, and there's a legal template. And they have a template, and it turns out that the numbers on the left side, you can get to them. Normally they're restricted. As you can see, when the cursor moves, it goes down, okay? I can't get to those numbers. But if you go to view and then go to header and footer, now the numbers become available. All you have to do is click on it, and now you can access them. If you want to change it, it's treated like the header. Okay, and then you can close it. But yeah, they do have a template. That's how you get to it. It took me years to figure that out.
How are you able to stack the footers down at the bottom? They're called, not footers. But
well, the footer, when you bring up your headers and footers, you click on...
Footnotes. Yeah. How do you do that so nicely?
Oh, footnotes?
Yeah, how do you do that so nicely?
That's automatic. I don't do it. The program does it. All I do, here's what I do. I click on insert. Let's put in a footnote, okay? Right here. Okay, Land North. All right? Put the cursor there, right where I want the footnote, before the comma, let's say. Oh, I like it after the comma. And then I click on insert, and then you go down here to reference. If you have an older version of Word, it'll say footnote. But on this version of Word, it says reference. And then you go over to footnote, and you click on that. Okay, it comes up with this menu. And now you have a choice. You want a footnote or an endnote? Footnotes go at the bottom of the page, the foot of the page. Endnotes go at the end of the entire paper. I prefer footnotes because you can go right down and read it, you know, without having to search to the end. Anyhow, footnotes, you have your choice of numbering format. You can have digits, or you can have letters, capital letters, Roman numerals. Okay? Or you can have a custom mark, your own symbol, whatever it is. And then you can tell it what to start at. And you can have the numbering continuous or restart on each page. You got a lot of flexibility here. And then you can apply the changes to the whole document or, well, I guess it's the whole document here. Whenever you see that, normally it's either the whole document or from this point forward. Anyhow, and then you just click on insert. Okay? And then you type in, this is a footnote. Okay?
No italics. You never put italics. Just
well, if you want to, you can. Sure. Yeah. I can select it. Okay. Go up here. Make it italics. Make it bold. Underline it. Okay. Center it. You have all the options that you have with your text. Okay. And what's interesting is that here's what I like about this. When you're going along reading your paper, you know, when you're working on your paper. By the way, this is one of the strongest arguments I have for having a computer instead of a typewriter. But if you take the cursor and put it over the footnote, it pops up. This is a footnote. It shows you what's in the footnote. And if you click on it, double click, it takes you right down to the footnote. Okay, so you can see the footnote itself. And the cursor on it again, and double click on it, and it takes you back up to the text. So, a lot of fun.
Show them how to put the yellow and green in there.
Oh, the yellow? Well, of course, I put the yellow to distinguish from the paper, you know,
yes.
To emphasize it. But all you have to do is set the cursor there, hold the left button down on your mouse, and, you know, select that. And then you go up here, and you choose your color.
Highlight.
Yeah, you highlight it, and you choose your color. And here's a good color right here. Black. All right.
That's a gopher color.
Yeah. And of course, since that's black, I want the letters. Well, let's pick yellow for the letters. Okay? But that's how you would change it. Yeah. So you can... It takes a while to learn the software, but once you're... But you understand that these are all features. They're special in one sense. I don't use the features for legal papers other than the footnotes. That's about the only footnote, the feature I use. And being able to set the paragraphs and this type of thing. I set the paragraphs, all of them to 12 points, 12 points per line. And I basically have single spacing between paragraphs too, 12 points between paragraphs.
Is 12-point what they require anyway?
That's your standard. It's either 10-point or 12-point, but 12 is preferred because some judges are old and they need glasses.
I think district court's even 14-point.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but yeah, I've only seen 12-point as specified. But it's been a while since I've read the rules. They've been making changes to the rules. Yes.
Yeah, people won't learn the legal things you're learning with Bill with using the word processor, but I was in the Santa Monica Library a couple weeks ago, and I checked out the Video Professor series.
Uh-huh.
A lot of libraries have them. They've been selling them on TV, I think, for just the shipping and handling. But that for just learning Word and how to use a lot of these programs, I thought they were excellent. But if you apply it with Bill's view into the law, you can learn a little extra, you know, that way, and there's really no cost.
Yeah, it's a tool, and it's here to stay. I suggest that everybody learn it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Another thing you can do with these notes, you can cut and paste them or copy them. So let's say I do a copy. All right, I highlighted it, and I click on Edit and Copy. And then I click down here. Here's Eileen Bonner. All right, go there. And I say Edit and Paste. And so it sticks in and automatically renumbers it. Okay, and also stuck it in at the bottom, note number 2, and I still have it in the notepad. So let's see. Let's put this note after Mountain Finder North here, okay? And then I'll say edit and paste. And so it sticks it in, and it renumbers the notes that they're always in order. So, yeah.
Have you found the function that will make 2 and 3 IBID?
2 and 3 IBID? I think you have to write that in manually. I don't know. But, yeah, you could put IBID there manually. But it's really, you know, needless to say, I enjoy it. And so when you copy a paragraph of text, sometimes you're writing a paper and you've already written the text in another paper, so all you do is you bring up that text, copy it, paste it into the other paper, and all the footnotes come with it. So
you can go to tables, I believe, and bring up a thing for section when you're doing
uh-huh.
code, and it'll give you a section mark.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can have sections.
Or copyright, it will do the same thing for behind your name.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There we go. Getting rid of these things. Also, you can have automatic paragraph numbering. Okay? And so, sometimes I'm shifting around paragraphs, so I'll cut it out here, paste it there, it automatically renumbers all the paragraphs. Never have to worry about the order. It's really a writer's dream, actually. Okay, well, continuing on with this, that's the caption. Now, after the caption, you have the cause of action. Okay? So you specify the form, which in this case would be a court of record, and you identify the parties and their capacities if known. So, now what we're looking at right now is what I call the declaration template. But here's a sample declaration that we've got. Everybody can read that, I hope. Can you see that okay from the back? Okay, so here we have a case, and this is modeled after a real case. And there's Complainer Doe, also known as People of the State of California. When we sued, my whole position, until shown otherwise, is that there's nothing wrong with the state. I own it. It's mine. The only problem I'm having is that the people that I have indirectly hired are not doing the job that I've hired them for. Okay, they're abusing their discretion and this type of thing. So I have no beef against the state. My beef is against these individuals. So I'll sue the individuals and hope that they will step, that the state will come in and say, wait a minute, these guys were doing their jobs. You should be suing me, not them. Now I can bypass the court of claims, you see, and say thank you very much. You know, I always want a deep pocket if I can find one. No, bypass the court of claims. See, the court of claims is who you go through to initially. But when you already have a lawsuit in action and they step in and say, hey, we're the defendant, not these guys. See?
So be it.
Okay? Also, what you want is a policymaker in there. You've got to have somebody who comes back and maybe in his answer he'll say that it wasn't me, that I was just doing my job, and that this is the policy. Thank you very much. Now you can add the state as a defendant. The state waives its court of claims procedure when it volunteers to be a defendant. And if this, the court of claims is a 60-day delay anyway. You know, that's really how it is.
So an agent or an officer of the acting is it for an agency of the state can invoke the state then? In other words, by saying, I was just doing my job?
Well, if he's a policymaker, sure. And judges are policymakers. Okay? Absolutely. Yeah, they're management. Now, you know, the worker bee, you know, the guy who's going out digging holes, he doesn't make policy. You know, and if he screws up, that doesn't mean the state's responsible. They tell him what his job is. If he does something else, you can't watch your employees all the time. But when you have the policymaker up there saying, hey, this is how we do things, well, thank you very much. Now the state's involved. And we have that situation in Aurora's case. Because when they did their demurs, they said, the only reason we did not modify the suit is because we didn't want to extend it. We've already got $20 million, okay? And we're already set up now because we knew in advance that all these guys are going to ignore us. They're not they're going to play their power position. So, but now we're set up where we've got them now. We're headed for the federal courts because the whole system is not responsive to law. So, and I expect that, and then if you read the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution says that whenever the state is a party, the Supreme Court of the United States is a court of original jurisdiction. Okay, so original jurisdiction means trial court. It's a court by right, not by privilege. See, appeal to the Supreme Court is a privilege. They can turn that down, but they can't turn down a case that's filed. Well, let's put it this way, they shouldn't. You know, the Constitution says that's the court to be in. So, you look at the California Vehicle Code, it tells you right in there. They have a section which says that if you accept a license under the terms of the code, then you agree to the local courts hearing the cases. A little fancier word, but that's what they say. Okay? That's how they avoid the Supreme Court. Because you contract to go into a local court. Anyway, so I suspect Aurora's case is going to be ultimately in the Supreme Court of the United States with California as a defendant, along with all those other clowns that thought they were having fun. Well, okay, now this is a sample case. It's verified, all right? Now, here's the key thing right here.
Excuse me, Mr. Bill.
Yes.
It sounds, when you deliver the statement, it sounds so easy, huh? But I would like to make clear to everyone that it's hard, sir. It's too much to tackle. But if you're not aligned to yourself to the truth that you would like to come out, that you're just so pissed off, and so I don't want to be, sounds like one here, but I wish I could deliberately say those words, but it's just that I cannot really say those words.
Well,
but I'm pissed off. But I'm saying it's just not easy, sir. It just take you the way you are because you have this belief.
And well, I suspect that most of the people here have been in jail at one time or another. And we all know the frustration and the energy it takes to put together a lawsuit. No question about it. You're absolutely right. This is, it's hard to keep your energy up. It's hard to keep the proper attitude and so on.
The only way I make it so simple is if I separate my body to my head,
mm-hmm.
and then I could do my due diligence 100%. I don't even have the feeling. All I know is the truth.
Right.
That's why my application is all my mm-hmm. intelligence. But I have to separate from my neck down mm-hmm. to my neck up.
Right.
And that's the only way I could function.
Right. Yeah, you do have to develop that remoteness to your own case. You know, it's tough to keep an even keel. And when you write your papers, it's good to give it to someone else, some friend to read it, because they will detect that involvement you have. A person who's not involved can critique your papers. Even if they're wrong, you should still have them critique it, because it may trigger your thinking or set you back. It's our nature that we have to have feedback on who and what we are and our writings. And I'll write things sometimes. I'll write something. I'll spend a day writing something, and I'll put it away for 2 or 3 days and come back and read it. And I make all kinds of changes as a result of that. And because now I'm reading somebody else's writing. That's the way it seems. It's a good technique. So you do have to get that psychological separation that if you're too close to your case, it affects how you do things. Anyway, here's what you do. When you set up your lawsuit, you just say simple words. You say, like, Robert Anderson, right, here and after Robert, is one of the people of California and in this court of record complains of. Right there, you have thrown in the bombshell. Okay? When you say you're one of the people of California, that automatically means you're sovereign. You don't have to say you're sovereign. You are sovereign. Okay? Where did I get the word people from? One of the people of California. I got it straight out of the preamble of the Constitution. The highest authority. Yeah, we the people. The word people is plural or singular. Works either way. It's correct to say that I am a people. Okay? You are a people. All of you are people. Okay? It's plural or singular. The word people is not the plural of the word person. The plural of the word person is persons with an S. Okay? So, I'm one of the people, or I am a people. Okay? In this case, remember this. What's the purpose, the number one purpose of a court? Anybody remember?
No.
That's exactly right, to put on a show. So, when I write this, I'm writing this for the long ears, not the long hairs. Okay? So, I'm writing this for the ignorant opposition. And I know they're ignorant. They go to school. They learn all kinds of procedure, but they don't understand the system, okay? And so, I write this so that I slide things by them. And this is a great one. You just say, I'm one of the people of California. The guy reads this, you know, yeah, okay, one of the people, right? Moves on. But there's no significance of that to the attorneys. And in this court of record complain of? Well, everybody knows that these are courts of record. They all keep a record. In fact, if you look up in Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition, it says right there, a court of record keeps a record of the proceedings and has the power to fine or jail for contempt. It says that, I think, in the 6th and 7th editions, too. I don't know, maybe the 8th. Okay? But if you look at the 4th edition, it says that, too. But it also says three more things. And one of the things it says is that it's proceeding according to the common law, which you know automatically throws out all the statutes. And it says that the tribunal is independent of the magistrate. And it also says in the penal code that all judges are magistrates. Okay? So no judge is allowed to make a decision in a court of record. So right there in that simple statement, I've suspended the judge, I've established my sovereignty, and they don't even know it. And I'm fine. I'm comfortable with that. You know, I mean, it is not my responsibility to educate them about law. After all, they all claim they are attorneys at law. They're all bragging that they know common law. Secretly, I know they only know equity and statutes. But they make the claim, who am I to challenge them? I'm not there to quality control the lawyers. Yes,
Mr. Bill, during the time I was telling you guys I would like to apply for PROPER, and then they said again that the 1368, I'm incompetent. Remember that?
Well, Penal Code 1368 deals with
1370, yeah, 1370 in them paperwork, which is incompetence to stand in trial.
Mm-hmm.
But during the time, I would like to apply for my being a PROPER, so I could go ahead and see. I didn't know the meaning between the Juris Juris and the PROPER. But guess what? That day, when I keep asking them, I wish to be released at the same time after I, deny I don't want to be a PROPER.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, she's a lady judge, she said, well, I cannot release you now, but I didn't know how to ask
mm-hmm.
why, what hold mm-hmm. you up, you know, so I didn't ask that. But then I found that out that it didn't come through because I brought it up, there's a conflict interest here.
Mm-hmm.
I filed, there was a claim on this charge.
Sure.
So you have to really know what's going on and be aware,
well,
you know.
You have to know what's going on. That is true.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you can't know what's all going on. Nobody knows everything. And it isn't always possible, especially when you're in incarcerated. It's not always possible for you to keep your wits about you. I mean, it's tough to be in jail.
Mr. Magistrate, sorry to interrupt.
Excuse me. You can't talk yet. You're gonna address me that way.
As the representative of a number of sovereigns here, I've been in.
Now, what is it you wanted to say?
As a representative of a number of sovereigns here, I request a motion of the court to take a break.
Granted.
Motion to observe
the
adjourn is always in order.
Point of personal privilege. All right, well, now I guess we were talking about the commencement here. And basically, the commencement, you identify the parties and the forum. What we say here in the first cause of action, Robert Melvin Anderson, here and after Robert, is one of the people of California and in this court of record complains of. So right there, by stating he's one of the people of the jurisdiction, in this case California, he in accordance with the preamble of the Constitution, he's established his sovereignty. Right? The people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America, or they established it for California, whatever it says. So That gives you the sovereignty, and you don't have to brag about it. You just say it nice and quietly. And the court of record, that's all defined. And the key things here that we're interested in is the fact that the court of record is prohibits the judge from making any decisions, because the judge is a magistrate, and the tribunal has to be independent of the magistrate. And who's the tribunal? Well, it's the king or the jury of kings.